Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show, episode number 140. We have two sponsors. Environments for Humans are sponsoring their SaaS Summit. Go to SaaSSummit.com. You have mere days to decide to get on this. It is November 4th. It is an all-day conference, from like whatever it is, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. kind of thing that you can attend anywhere in the world because it's online. But all the conferences are live. You can ask questions live and stuff. It's so great. Go to SaaSSummit.com. And Media Temple, the web host that sponsors or that hosts CSS Tracks and Shop Talk Show and lots of different websites, will tell you all about them. They actually have hosting plans just for WordPress, and WordPress is going to be one of them things we talk about today on Shop Talk Show. Let's kick things off. Oh my God.
Welcome to a very special HTMLoween episode of the Shop Talk Show. I am one of your hosts, Count Incrementula. And with me is sexy Chris Coyer.
I'm just going to use my regular voice because I was not prepared for that. What's another Halloween voice? How do you do like Frankenstein voice?
Very scary times.
I'll tell you what.
On the Shop Talk Show, a special Halloween episode. Stop sounds. Okay.
Wow.
I'm shivering.
I got a new soundboard for the occasion. Everybody? Hey, Chris, who do we have in the studio with us today?
Thanks for joining us, Mr. Justin Sainton. Did I say it right?
Oh, close enough. That'll work.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Justin, thank you for joining us so much for this Halloween episode. It is kind of a special episode because it does happen to be October 31st, although, you know, other than Dave's crazy soundboard, I don't know that we...
Wow. Wow, this is really special. I feel incredibly honored to be on such a momentous occasion as Halloween.
Yeah, happens once a year. Indeed. So you are, Portland, right?
Yeah, I'm up near Portland, Oregon.
Up near?
Yeah, I'm like 45 minutes south. Every time somebody says they're in Portland, they're not actually in Portland. There's nobody that lives in Portland. It's kind of a, thing.
It's a mythical town.
Yeah, it is.
It doesn't even exist.
I lived in Portland, but I know what you mean. You could live in
there's Beaverton and just north Hillsboro, Tiger and Westland and like all these places that people live.
Yeah, sure. But you know, it's just easier to say Portland. Just like, depending on how far away I'm telling someone I live, I sometimes say Chicago. Because why not, you know? Midwest, right. People can picture that.
Oh, yeah, we fly out to Kenosha a couple times a year, and people are like, what's a Kenosha? Right. I'm like, oh, it's basically Chicago.
Yeah, it's like fried.
Right.
cool. So, and you are... You just do tons of WordPress work. So you have your own company that does WordPress work, but you also work right on WordPress sometimes, right? And
Yeah. So really my days are filled with WordPress. It's all we do. And kind of what you're alluding to is like being a core contributor. So I try to devote whatever time I can to giving back to WordPress, and whether that's kind of looking at tickets and contributing code or helping out in the forums and that kind of thing. We do a ton of e-commerce. So I'm the lead developer for the WordPress e-commerce platform. Pretty much our days are filled.
That's a popular one, right? So is it partly because it's in the repo, it's free, right?
So the two biggest e-commerce platforms for WordPress right now are WooCommerce and WP e-commerce.
One of the two of those is free.
Yeah, and they're both free, and they're both kind of the more general platforms. Free. And there's other more specialized ones like Easy Digital Downloads and things like that. The e-commerce space in WordPress is pretty fun and exciting for sure.
Nice. So I've poked around at a few of these. It's been a while since I've made a WordPress e-commerce-y thing, because a lot of times I'm just selling one thing, in which case I would use my old alma mater WooFoo, just because, I don't know, it's really good at selling one thing really easily, and I don't need the stuff. But if you need more features, like something possibly like inventory tracking, or just the idea of having a shopping cart in general, you would need something to help you with that. And I'm sure both of these plugins can do that. And then the business model for them, at least for WooCommerce, when I looked at it, is kind of like, okay, well, here's the plugin for free, but if you want like Stripe integration, then that's a paid plugin. Is that kind of the same approach you take?
Yeah, exactly. That's totally it. It's kind of the paid upgrade model. And we do try to be, you know, it's always a balance with open source software between kind of being lean and mean and being kind of feature full enough to do what people need out of the box. So yeah, we try to keep it lean and mean, but also do what 80% of people need. And then for the 20%, we have, you know, lots of paid upgrades and things like that to, you know, basically keeps the lights on.
Pretty good model. Yeah, and speaking of the lights, I guess I Justin's on in part because he's one of my go-to people for when I need WordPress work done. I just ask Justin and try to persuade him to put me on the schedule somewhere to get some stuff done. And it's always really hard, really sucky work, so sorry about that.
I should have that sound play every time I get an email from Chris. That would be so good.
Yeah, it's never something easy. It's always something very weird. In fact, recently we've been just struggling with getting Markdown to just do the right thing in the comments. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's not as easy as you would think, because there's a lot of things at play when you post a comment that with the default WordPress comment system, what gets processed by what and what happens first and stuff. And now in with Jetpack, they have Markdown processing and, you know, whatever. So we've been trying to just – I want to just be Markdown everywhere because I like Markdown, but posting code in there gets tricky. Anyway, we're working on it. We'll get there.
Yeah, there's lots of little edge cases that we end up running into. And I think a lot of it you don't really run into because, I mean, honestly, because who posts more code to any site besides CSS tricks, right? So a lot of these Jetpack sites work fine on Markdown generally. But once you get into like nested functions and all sorts of shenanigans, you find edge cases that aren't exactly fun.
Yeah, no. Anyway, we don't have to get deep into that, but I just figured out...
What percentage of your like life is just straight clinical WordPress, and then when do you have to get like really dirty, like rip out the guts and put a new Frankenhead on it?
A new Frankenhead. Let's see. I mean, honestly, so most of the WordPress work I do is kind of like the high scale, the, you know, dealing with server stuff, dealing with caching stuff, dealing with, you know, why is PayPal's API system broken? Oh, it's because you have a version of curl that has a weird cipher thing or WP remote post, like the WordPress HTTP API works fine with streams and things like that, but not with curl, so we have to override that to use streams, or, you know, it's this stuff that just kind of is really, really interesting, and it's really like high value, like it solves a really tough problem, but some of it you're just digging into and it's like, okay, deep breath, I guess we're going deep today, guys. So
because with those kind of problems you like kind of don't know what's going on, right? Because it, like, if a curl request is messed up, you're like, all right, let's try things.
Yeah, so like one of those kind of WordPress isms is that, you know, with enough eyes, all bugs are shallow. And so the nice thing about WordPress is it has a ton of eyes. So when we run into these issues, it's not that hard to say, okay, you know, A, we've probably seen it before, or someone has. B, as complicated as it looks on the surface, there's some ancient wizard on Stack Exchange that probably solved this, right? So and I think we all kind of go through that debugging process of like, okay, I have enough of an educated guess to get me going. And then you just dig in and work it out.
Cool.
That sounds insane. I'm glad there's people like you that can do that work.
Yeah, so I mean that is a lot of it. It's just those kind of problem solving issues. But I mean, yeah, the stuff that is I think the most exciting is when you can really, and it's not even about WordPress. WordPress is a great tool that solves a lot of really interesting problems. But when I can connect with a business and they say, "Man, we have this problem," whether it's a problem, you know, with their systems, if it's an e-commerce business that for whatever reason isn't selling and converting like they need to be able to approach the problem and say, "Man, there's really amazing solutions that we can build for you that happen to be on top of WordPress." That's fun. I mean, that's what makes me excited to come to work every day.
Very nice. We had a little conversation maybe Dave remembers, but we got into this thing about WordPress plugins, like perhaps some of the more robust plugins that add some kind of brand new functionality that isn't there in WordPress. And the one that I'm thinking of, but there's actually a whole bunch of examples of this, is like maybe say WP Polls, which adds poll functionality through widgets, or think of like Contact Form 7 or one of those really popular ones, right? That need they do something on the front end, but that need both CSS and additional CSS and additional JavaScript to do what they do. So sure. Let's say you're the developer of that plugin. You need to probably enqueue some CSS and enqueue some JavaScript to do that. Now, let's say you're somebody like me who just runs a site and wants to use these plugins, but I'm also I'm just a general front-end developer. I'm concerned about performance. That's just one of those things that's part of my deal. I work into all my build processes. I need ways to concatenate things together because that's part of our job. If you look into making websites faster, you'll always, that's probably the first thing you read is concatenate scripts and styles. You know, the less things a site has to load, the faster it is. And we were talking about that in regard to these WordPress plugins. And let's say you're using three of those types of plugins which wouldn't be totally unreasonable. And so now there's three additional CSS files, three additional JavaScript files on the front end of your site, right? Is that, and then the conversation is, what do we do about that? I don't know. Maybe we should put this onus on plugin developers to be more responsible with that, or provide UI controls to allow us to dequeue those things so that we can load them ourselves in one way. And we didn't come to any kind of big solution. But I brought it up on GitHub and posted a little thing like this. Maybe this is how we should do it. And it was kind of a weird misguide. I was just trying to like start a discussion about it. And I did start a good discussion about it. And I ended up publishing a post today that kind of wrapped it up. And the idea being that, I'm talking about this just because because it's relevant. It wraps up a previous episode's comment and stuff. And there's three ways you can approach it. One of them is there's some other additional plugins that you can use whose whole purpose in life as a plugin is to show you all the enqueued scripts and styles on a particular page, show you the name of them, and then allow you to pick and choose which ones you want to concatenate together, which I think is a tremendously good solution for this. Another one is to manually dequeue stuff. Just figure out what's enqueued and then go dequeue it and then do what you do on your side. Make it part of your grunt build or whatever the heck it is to go grab that CSS and you handle the concatenation of it yourself in some way. And then one of them is, during this conversation, a guy named Nate Wright threw together a plugin that I thought was pretty cool. It allows you from the front end on any page, click this drop-down-y thing, and it shows you anything that's been enqueued on that page and allows you to one-click kind of dequeue it, and then it stays dequeued, you know, as long as this plugin is there. Nice. And then it gives you a link to the asset as well. So it's kind of like, not only is it dequeued now, but here's where it was. So here's the file path, essentially, so you can go put it into your system as well. And I just published this morning on CSS Tricks. So those are the three ways. I think it wraps up that conversation pretty cleanly. And that's my whole story. Any thoughts?
Yeah. So that whole area of WordPress where you're kind of really dealing with enqueuing styles and enqueuing scripts, it kind of gets to a few deeper things. One of them is like dependency management. which gets tricky having, you know, plugins that integrate with plugins. Some plugins do things right and using, like, you know, the WPNQ script, WPNQ style functions and APIs. Some of them don't, right? So you'll have themes that will, like, output their own version of jQuery, which is ridiculous and should never, ever be done under any circumstances. Huh. And, I mean, running a plugin that runs, like, 80,000 stores and has, like, 3 million downloads, we get loads and loads of support requests when people activate it. And they're like, hey, your plugin broke my stuff. And we're like, probably not, but let's check it out and see what's going on, you know. And we check it out and we're like, okay, so we're loading WordPress's jQuery, which is proper. And you guys have like a version that's like three versions old in your theme. So some of that is less of a technical problem and more of an educational problem, right? So how do we get developers to all be using these right APIs and doing these right things? Because if everybody's using these enqueued APIs and everybody's being responsible with them, because that's kind of the other level, is responsibly loading and enqueuing those assets. So if you have a plugin, you know, like an e-commerce plugin that's loading like the checkout process JavaScript, but it's loading it on every single page and not just the checkout page.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that bugs me.
Exactly, and that's totally irresponsible. So it's not saying, hey, plugins, never load stuff to do stuff, because you have to do stuff, but just do it responsibly, do it right. I think that's as much or more of an education issue for developers as it is a technical issue. Because there's always going to be gotchas, and in something as big as WordPress that runs, you know, whatever, 23.2% of the entire internet, there's not going to be like a catch-all solution that's going to work on every server in every circumstance. So technically, I think there's some limitation in what we can do today. But I think on the education end, really just educating developers and saying, hey, load what you need, where you need it, when you need it, if you need it. Because some of it is just like, you know, they're loading these massive libraries to like use jQuery to hide or show something, when it's just as easy, right, to do, you know, just to use JavaScript. So, or not to hide it, or to rethink the UX or whatever. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thoughts on it. And there's, you know, as you saw, there's loads of different approaches and how you might handle that issue, like on a single site or a single situation.
Is there situations where it's too hard for a developer to know? Like, let's say your widget needed a particular resource. So how do you, I just don't know on the WordPress side. Can I test, like, if page has widget, is there some way to know that any particular page has that widget? Or let's say even more different, you know, a short code for a form or something. Can you test if that short code is present in the content of that page and then know that you're going to need to then enqueue a script conditionally based on the presence of that short code? That seems like tough stuff.
You couldn't always do that, but as of like WordPress 3.0, I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it's like 3.5 or 3.4, you can do that. So that's around the time like the has short code functionality was entered into WordPress. And so, yeah, as of that point, you can enqueue scripts conditionally within a short code. And so if it detects a short code on the page, it'll insert it in the footer instead of the header like it used to. Because, yeah, that used to just be impossible. But as of, you know, the most recent versions over the last year or two, you can totally do that, and that would be the responsible way to do that if you have a plugin that uses short codes a lot.
Lovely. Okay. So good. You know, it's education on both sides, and yeah, and that the tools are there for even you know, somebody who, you know, doesn't, you know, runs a WordPress site like me. And I know some stuff about WordPress, right? You know, like I did write a book on it at one point in my life, but it wasn't that hardcore developer-y of a book, you know, it was fairly high level. And a lot has changed since then. So I feel like now I'm in this weird position where I, like, I know WordPress, I work with it all the time, but I'm not like super hardcore about it. So I'm in this spot where I still want tools, I still want help, I still want something like these plugins I mentioned to help me dequeue things properly and stuff.
Yeah, and I think tools like that are super, super helpful. Like on those single site instances where you're dealing with you know, that localized problem on your environment. Which is a totally different issue, and it's an issue where those kind of one-off tools are super handy. And then, yeah, dealing with kind of the bigger issues of, like, how do we responsibly handle these different dependencies in WordPress over the long haul, and how do you do it with CDNs and dealing with sessions and cookies over CDNs and SSL and all these other things. Those are longer-term, slightly more painful issues to solve.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So can we? Sorry if I'm a little crackly there. We'll fix it in post. Is there anything you want to mention, Dave, before we get into the Q&A?
No, let's go. Well, I wanted to bring up some errors and omissions. So these are some things that we said and maybe didn't get exactly right, and people brought it up on Twitter. So thank you, Matt Lockyer, mentioned the blurry text in 3D transforms that we talked about in the last episode, where like if you rotate your text, it'll get blurry, that we talked about that. He's saying that it is only from 3D transforms. So if you use a 2D transform, you're fine. But if you use a 3D, then like the GPU creates a raster image or something. He sent a tweet. We can link to the tweet where he has like a gist that kind of shows how it works. And Zolt Pence wrote in about we were talking about a jQuery plugin I was trying to come up with this jQuery plugin that could find the face for your responsive image to like auto resize and crop. He knew about it. It is called jQuery Focus Point. And said he was using it on a site, like a news site. So apparently it's pretty decent. It can kind of find the inside of the image or what is really important content. So I thought that was kind of cool. I have no idea how the performance and stuff is on that. So use with caution, but it looks kind of cool. So everyone, I guess, let us know how it goes. That's all.
You know, one of those questions that we get fairly common on Shop Talk Show is about, like, let's say you're at an agency and you're trying to change jobs or something, but you can't show anything from there because you just can't or something. Or let's say you're, trying to get, your first job and you're trying to figure out what goes into your portfolio and there's a bunch of stuff that you're not proud of or something like that. There's Jeffrey Zubin wrote a post called Help, My Portfolio Sucks on a List Apart. It was kind of fun to see Jeffrey writing for a List Apart again with his Ask Dr. Web series. It's kind of a throwback to the past. But it's an article all about that. That's kind of like, what do you do if you're not proud of a lot of the work that you're done? Do you put it in your portfolio or not? And that's kind of a common question on Shop Talk Show, so we'll link that up. You should go read that.
That was a good post. Yeah. Good times. It's nice to have old Dr. Webb back.
Basically, don't put garbage in your portfolio, though. That would be my advice for one thing. Rather see nothing than garbage. Do you want to do this other article, or should we get into Q&A?
No, let's get into some Q&A. Here we go. Max Stober writes in, how much does A/B testing help in e-commerce? And which tools or plugins do you use to A/B test? Do you believe A/B testing is important? Or do you think it's a waste of time?
Wow. Do I have to answer the question in the same voice?
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Then I'm going to have some technical difficulties here. So A/B testing, right? So for those that might be unfamiliar, it's basically kind of the classic example, right, is changing like the checkout button or the buy now button color and seeing if one color converts better than the other and that kind of thing. And obviously, there's loads and loads of research on it. Some people say it's, it's snake oil, and some people say it's revolutionary. And ultimately, the actual cost to try this for an individual is so low that I think it's insane to not try it. It doesn't necessarily make a load of sense if you're the kind of shop that does like one or two sales a week or gets like really, really low traffic or something like that, because it's kind of hard to test when you don't have much of kind of a data set to work with. But if you do, if you have, some significant amount of traffic or sales, I would highly, highly, highly recommend it. I think it's actually incredibly helpful. And one of the guys that I chat with a lot about this, because we both do a lot about it, is a guy called Pippin Williamson. And a lot of guys who are in the WordPress world will know him. Chris, you know him. He's great.
Hey, Pippin.
Hey, Pip. Anyway, he's just a really good friend, and we connect a lot because we're both we're both leaders in kind of open source e-commerce projects, and we just end up connecting a lot. Anyway, he does quite a bit of A-B split testing on their Easy Digital Downloads product, and we do a fair bit on our WP e-commerce product. And honestly, some tests go really well and convert really well, and some don't. And it's kind of a mixed bag, but I think it's always worth it to try it and see. One, like totally anecdotally, that I'll probably misquote, but I still remember as really significant, was I think Pippin on their site like reduced the width of their checkout page and did like a 50-50 split test. And a narrower checkout page ended up increasing sales like by 10% or something like that. So, I mean, with a volume that's significant, you're talking about a lot of money that you make just by reducing the width of a checkout page. And so I think as you kind of dig into the research and dig into some psychology behind things, and then just play with it and see, I think it's absolutely worthwhile. And it's something that I think any shop with any kind of volume should definitely try. Because, yeah, more often than not, you might see these little changes make a 3 to 5% increase here or there. But if you do that over a number of tests, it can really affect your bottom line. So I'm a big fan.
I think that all sounds pretty reasonable. On the flip side of that coin, it always seems like a little bit of dangerous road to travel. I think that whatever you test, maybe the bottom line could be you need to be very comfortable with if one of those two wins implementing the solution. Like yeah. Both those things match your level of taste or whatever. Like if on CSS Tricks I tested, you know, whatever it is up there now and a version of the site which pops open a huge pop open that says sign up for the lodge right now with a huge green button and the picture of a blonde woman, just because we know those convert really well, right? So I did an A/B test on that and I found that that B won, that there was. That would be a bummer because I would be uncomfortable implementing that solution. It doesn't need to be that drastic. It can incrementally get you to that point. So just, you know, just be careful and test things that you're happy with, I guess.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's spot on for sure. And there's a lot of tools and different people like different tools. I like Optimizely. There's some people that like Visual Website Optimizer or Google Experiments, and you know, finding one that works for you is a process, but I like Optimizely quite a bit.
So what are situations that you would decide, hey, I'm going to test this, like I have a hypothesis, I'm going to test? Because that's for me the question is, usually we just say whenever there's a fight and two people have two opinions, we're like, oh, we'll A/B test it. You know, and it's like, cool, well, we just double quadrupled the work.
Right.
Like when do you kind of like...
Yeah, so A/B split testing shouldn't be a replacement for a proper conversation or an actual... good thought, right? So it's like, oh, let's put naked women on the site, or A, let's put a buy now button. Like, you know, there's some just stupid stuff that people are going to say in meetings or in whatever. I mean, we'll deal with teams of people, and you get marketing people in there and you get executive people in there. And there's just some really like unintelligent stuff that happens in meetings, which is why a lot of us don't like meetings. Right. And so I think A/B split testing is a matter of like, let's do this one really educated, possibly awesome thing versus this other really educated, possibly awesome thing. And so that kind of narrows it down to, for example,
I like that.
For example, right? So some of this stuff is just really obvious. So we have one situation where there's this product for sale that has a really long description, and it's necessarily long. Like you have to kind of get into it. Otherwise, you know, when it wasn't as long, they just got a ton of support questions and a ton of does it do this, does it do this kind of stuff. But you had to scroll all the way to the bottom to click the buy now button. And so we're like, huh, that is fine and it's selling, but I wonder if it would sell better if that was like fixed, or if that was like next to the title, or if you could always click the buy now button. And you know, we tested it and shocker, right? Always being able to see the buy now button converted better. So little things like that, it's not necessarily like you have to dig into the psychology or the research of things, but just things that seem like, huh, as a user, as a buyer, this seems like an obvious area that we could improve. Let's test it and see. Sometimes those common sense things are the things that are just totally missed in the process of building out like an e-commerce website, you know?
Cool. I have a few more questions about this, but let's do a sponsor quick because we're about halfway through the show. This is a time sensitive one because when this airs, which will be probably on Monday, November, what is that going to be? Like 2nd or something right after Halloween here? 3rd, November 3rd. On Thursday, November 6th, so just later that same week, is the SAS Summit. So the URL for that is SASS, Fantastically Awesome Style Sheets, right? SASSummit.com, and it'll redirect you to the Environments for Humans site where you need to go. It is a online conference, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., that is all about learning SAS, right? The world's most popular CSS preprocessor. We talk about it all the time and the great community around it. One of the reasons you might pick SAS is because there's conferences like this, that the community has grown and surrounded SAS. It's a fantastic choice for that. So if you aren't using it yet, or even if you're using it, or even if you're a master of using it, I think there's things to be learned at this. You know, there's so many topics. And the conversations that surround SAS aren't always just about, like, how do you use variables in CSS, you know? I think this conference is probably almost every talk is much higher level than that. You know, like I don't even think there's one session that goes into the very, very, very basics of using SAS. It's kind of like SAS is a thing. Now what? You know, so
it's like SAS is becoming this new name for how do you do CSS
architecture
in the modern era?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Modern CSS.
Cutting edge SAS, stuff that's just coming out. Streamlining your SAS. SAS and style guides. Modular CSS. SAS and responsive layouts, which is, you know, a match made in heaven. One SAS file, many sites. People you'll recognize from the Shop Talk show going to be speaking at it. Christopher said, hey, give away a ticket this show. And you know what? We don't have time to do that. So I think what we should do is give away a ticket live to the chat room. Who's listening in
there? Chat room.
Let's see. Do you got to think of a quiz question, Dave? What do you think?
All right, chat room. Here is the quiz question.
Are you choking?
All right. What is the name of the C library for SAS? What is the name for the C version?
Oh!
Awesome Fant is in.
You got it.
The lead.
Max, you're going to SASConf. Oh, everybody's
oh,
all over it.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. All right. Great job.
For the rest of you, you can't win anymore. You have to just go. And it's you use the coupon code ShopTalk for 20% off of the ticket price for it. It's inexpensive anyway. It's online. You can attend it anywhere in the world. You know, you want to go to this thing. They're super fun. You know, the chances of your questions getting answered at this versus a live conference are even better because you ask right in the chat room. So not only will the speaker potentially answer you, but all the fellow attendees will answer you too. It's quite a nice little community. Okay. Related to A/B testing. If you use a tool like Optimizely, let's say this is for me. I want an answer on this because I don't really get it yet. I mean, I think I get it, but whatever. Let's say what you want to test is a red button versus a green button. The way that our button becomes red or green is through some CSS being applied to it. And so what you don't want to do probably is like have different URLs, like, you know, check out process dash one or checkout process dash two. You wouldn't want to mess with your application that way, right? To the user, all the URLs, your whole app is going to be the same. It's just that, like, maybe different resources are being served, one of which has the CSS widget that makes the button turn red and one has CSS that makes the turn green. Is Optimizely the thing that handles the serving of that different resource? Or do you write some CSS that you give to Optimizely that it applies in addition to that page? Or, like, how does the color changing of that button happen?
Yeah, so Optimizely has like a visual editor that like takes your website into a visual editor and allows you to change text and images and styles, videos, like whatever elements on your page that you want to. And then through the JavaScript that it loads, I don't know like how the JavaScript does the magic, but it just applies the magic to the page based on kind of the split test.
That's pretty interesting. So it just flops out whatever you want, you know? And, you know,
yeah.
Some basic DOM manipulation is pretty easy, but you wouldn't want it to, like, load your fast and then have this big nasty like flash of changed text. So I wonder if it has some kind of render blocking thing that it does or something that.
Yeah, that would be honestly, that would be super interesting, like to dig into the internals of systems like that and see how they're doing it. Because I'm sure they all do it. You know, maybe some things are similar, some things are different, some things, you know, are better on mobile and so on and so on. So yeah, that would be really fascinating.
It's kind of like Mobify does the same kind of thing for mobile, is that they kind of like intercept the rendering of your page and then do stuff to it and then spit out a kind of changed document. And I heard that, God, somebody was talking about that it's based on some, like literally a bug that I think they're going to close in upcoming browsers. So I think people are kind of scrambling to be like, oh crap, we needed that bug. So we'll see what they do, you know? Okay. So that's that. Let's do another question if we can. We got here an audio one from Greg. Dave, do you want to intro that?
Oh yeah. Here we go, Greg. Greg sent in an audio question and we're loading.
Hi guys. I'm working with someone on a WordPress site. Clean it up and install a new theme. Here's the problem. They've got hundreds of posts and pages chock full of inline styling, and there are so many spans. It's bad. Please tell me there's a good way to strip out all the cruft from these posts and pages in bulk. Thank you.
Oh, spooky scary. Greg is dealing with bad markup. Is there any way to clean this out?
What would you do? Would you write would you write a MySQL thingy to like?
Well, I mean, it kind of depends on if. Well, I guess one thing really is, do they need the markup for anything in those pages, or is it okay just to totally strip all the tags out? Because just stripping HTML tags is really easy. I mean, WordPress has functions for that to strip tags. PHP even has functions for that. But if they need to keep some and not keep others, or, you know, that's kind of a problem that needs a little more communication. But if it's just a matter of stripping tags, that's super, super easy.
Yeah. Okay. It just seems like you're going to have to make some hard choices. You know, you're going to be like, can we look at these hundreds of posts, identify that X needs to happen to all of them equally? And if it's the stripping of tags, then maybe you can do, maybe there's a programmatic solution out of this.
Oh, there's got to be like an expunger plugin that just like sanitizes.
Wouldn't it be nice though if you didn't have to rely on it forever? Wouldn't it be nice if it scrubbed the actual content and resaved it so that this problem is like dealt with then for the future?
Right. I mean, you could literally write a routine that would loop through all the posts in your database. Hopefully it's not like a million or whatever. But you could write it and it would loop through the posts and it would strip the tags and then it could resave the content. And that would be like, you know, less than 20 lines of code probably. So that if it's just a matter of stripping tags, totally easy to do.
That's one of the things that I like about encouraging markdown isn't just that I like the markdown syntax that I do, but it's kind of like if you make this field markdown, and markdown accepts HTML, so you can still screw this up. But if you just say like, everybody just fill this field with just markdown, it really keeps those problems at bay. It's like, oh, but we need to put like a fancy image with float left on it. I'll be like, okay, that's a custom field then. That needs to be some, you know, or something like that. Or it needs to be in WordPress land. Maybe it could be a, you know, the thing with the square brackets, a short code or something that's programmatic that you can put in content that you know that you'll be able to control later programmatically and encourages no HTML mess, you know, like does good things for any CMS. Saying like this field's markdown, so just put markdown in it. All righty.
The HTML was coming from inside the post body.
Why are you so good at this?
Years of practice. I'm good. We're gonna get so many like complaints from this. There'll be people like, I was driving in a dark road and a chainsaw came after me and I thought I was actually getting chainsawed. people are gonna hate it. Okay, hey.
Next. I don't even want to go into it. It's such a fire hose.
Next question. Trent Hogan writes in, I was thinking about managing CSS and JS for WordPress as you guys were talking about recently, avoiding extra HTTP requests. This plugin may be worth a look. I haven't really had time to dig into it at all, but I would be interested to see what you think. And there's a link to
I should have looked at this. I put this in here yesterday because we already had a big conversation about this. So let's not go into it again. But this one is a different plugin. It's called auto optimize. I guess it's auto optimize, but there's only one O in the middle. Let's just leave it at that since we already talked about it, so we can talk about some different things. Sorry about that.
I've used this Autoptimize before, and it's pretty good. With any of these like auto minifier, auto stripper things that we've kind of talked about, like Justin, you have like a totally different experience, but like the probability that it's going to explode and like quit minifying stuff is like 100% for me.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of times the issue there is that you'll have scripts that are in queue that have like object literals that have data that that's supposed to be used in that script, and the minifiers don't account for that. So when it gets minified, the variables don't go with it, and stuff breaks. So that's kind of a common problem when minifying and concatenating stuff. But yeah, I would agree on the percentage. It seems to be about 100% of the time that stuff gets jacked up.
I can imagine 100 ways other than it stop failing to not work either. Imagine one that it's written such that all it does is look at everything, every CSS file that's being loaded on that page, and it just smushes them all together. I can see someone well-meaning doing that for you, I see the ones that are on this page. I'm going to squish them all together and serve them. Well, what about that next page that loads one more different one? What should happen then is probably those ones from the first page should just stay in that package that's already been created, because that's the one that's going to be most browser cache optimized. And then on the next page, it just loads that one additional. It shouldn't make some new package of everything smushed together again as some new concatenated plugin. And I have a feeling that's the approach that is occasionally taken. That's just gross. That's why I like having control over what gets concatenated together, so I can make decisions, because I know what the correct bundles of things should be. Anyway, it just worries me.
Yeah, I mean, something's better than nothing if you're gonna do it, but yeah, for whatever reason, it's like. I don't know. It's going to happen Tuesday morning at about 8:00. It just quits.
That's about right. Yeah.
So you're like, so then you're like, I have to do that on about 16 sites right now. So anyway, good luck. Hopefully that helps. Shall we do another question?
We sure should.
Eliel. I can't say your last name. Redson, I have a question about Bower in WordPress. So I installed CodeKit 2 and fiddled with the Bower components, which I haven't done before, and I installed WordPress, all good except that the WordPress files are in the Bower components folder. I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to use Bower components folder as the root for your WordPress browser. So, what do I do? Do I take it out? In that case, what's the point of using Bower to install WordPress?
I think this guy kind of answered his own question, right? What's the point? Yeah. So I am completely ignorant of how you might use Bower to install WordPress, so I have no good answer for that, man.
The one what I've heard about Bower is it's mostly when I was like, I finally get Bower now. The point is to keep front end components up to date. And people are like, "Eh, not really." And it's like, "Really?" Because it seems like that would be the cool thing. Then it would be the gems for front end. It would be the NPM for front end components, kind of, right? And I think it kind of can be used like that, which does appeal to me in some way. But yeah, certainly. But I think most people say, well, it's not really for that. It's just like to be really quick, you know? It's just like grab it, you know? It's like people get really used to the command line for it or some kind of tool built on Bower. And when they build projects, they, you know, some front-end component can pop into their head and they can just grab it really quick. They don't need to like think about it. They don't have to Google it. They don't have to download zip files, unzip the zip files, move the files to the project they need it to. They just go, Bower, get that thing, drop it in here, you know? And so I think that's the main appeal to Bower, I think. I'm more interested in the keep my front end components up to date kind of thing, but that's dangerous too, you know, because when front end components break as dependencies, it's a little less obvious than when back end ones do. You know, if your gems get out of whack, stuff breaks. But in the front end, it's just like, oh, maybe it'll throw an error on some page somewhere. I don't know. It's still a kind of an unsolved problem, perhaps. But yeah, for WordPress, certainly not. I think it just would be, if anything, it's just a quick way to download a copy of WordPress. But I wouldn't trust it.
No, I would CD into your theme directory. Like, go to your theme directory and install Bower components into there if you want to use Bower in your theme. That's where I would do things. But I don't know, Bower and WordPress plugins, like, is there a difference, really? I mean, it's like you type a search term and click install, basically.
Right, yeah, I mean, I sort of get the appeal of a package manager like Bower and, like, in the front-end stuff, like, for your theme in WordPress. But I think, honestly, I'm trying to think, there's a new WordPress theme company. I'm actually friends with the guys. It's called Flagship WP, and that's... To my knowledge, I think they use Bower in their WordPress theme kind of workflow, but I don't see how that would be necessary, like, on the client side. It's more for their development workflow. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know so little about Bower that I should probably just shut up. But yay, Bower.
Perfect. I haven't been hearing much about Bower. I wonder what the future of it is. It kind of like it was like popular for a second, and then it's kind of fallen out of coolness, perhaps.
Yeah, I think I think it fell out of coolness because it's just an NPM clone, basically, right? I mean, it does everything that NPM does, but it's front-endy. I don't know. I know it's been a pain to maintain, if I can lyrically impress you guys for a bit. It's been a pain to maintain.
I am very impressed. I should bring up our sponsor, Media Temple. We've been talking a lot about WordPress because we have Justin here, and Justin knows tons about WordPress. That's related to Media Temple in that they have a hosting plan that is specifically for WordPress. It is ever so slightly more expensive than their very least expensive grid plan, but it's only by a few bucks a month, right? And then it's different. Like it's kind of a one-click WordPress install kind of thing. Automatic WordPress core and security updates, one-click staging. Possibly the most valuable thing for you get is unlimited bandwidth. There's no cap at all to what you can serve with this plan for $29 a month, and save 25% too for the first month if you're trying it out with coupon code SHOPTALK. But yeah, it's kind of nice. It's nice to know that a company is like in on it because they offer this. It means that you just know that there's people that work there that know about it. You know, they wouldn't host, they wouldn't have this as a plan if they were clueless about what it is. In fact, this is new-ish to Media Temple, and I think, like any smart company would these days, they recognize that WordPress is a force to be reckoned with today on the web. A lot of people use it, a lot of people like it, and for good reason, it does a dang good job. So catering to it, knowing about it, you know, getting your hosting situated to handle it the best that it can, is in your favor. And so good on you, WordPress, for offering this, or Media Temple for offering WordPress specific hosting. I just mentioned that as one thing. They also have, you know, you can buy as much specialized hosting as you want from Media Temple, including some very expensive, very kind of blank servers. You can do whatever you want with. They offer all kinds of different stuff. Yeah, check out Media Temple. I've been using them forever. They are good to me. Cool. What else should we talk about?
All right, shall we jump to another question?
I wish I was good at spooky voice.
You want to do a spooky voice?
No, Chris, you do it.
For the sake of the internet, let's try it. Do you want to read this this one from Nick Gallup? Does that sound good?
I'll try.
Jim Capen. Jim Capen. Do the okay. Jim one, because it's pretty linear. Do you. Ready? All right, here we go.
I have been working on overhauling our site using WordPress. WooCommerce and the WooCanvas theme. Sorry, Justin, we should probably not be doing WooCommerce. So spooky, it's your competitor. I've been nothing but happy with WooCommerce. However, I suspect WooCanvas might be sacrificing performance for the sake of convenience. Other than saving me development time, is there any security or performance advantages to using a child theme? Or will a lean and custom theme perform better and be just as secure?
I guess let's start with, what the heck is WooCanvas, and is it does it sacrifice performance for convenience?
That's a good question.
That's my new hot drama sound effect. Okay.
That's fantastic. So Canvas, I know like WooThemes has a theme called Canvas. I don't know. I'm not like a WooCommerce expert, but I don't know if they're using the Canvas theme with WooCommerce, and that's kind of what that is. But no, I mean, honestly, like, yeah, I guess technically we're competitors with WooCommerce, but we're all open source platforms together, and that's kind of the open source spirit, is that, you know, we're community together, moving things forward. So yeah, I mean, I really like the guys at WooCommerce, and they do a great job. As far as performance and security, I mean, I can't really speak intelligently to that for their products, unfortunately.
Yeah, I understand. So, but let's say I have a question though that we can morph this question into. If you have an e-commerce plugin, part of the you need some like additional pages and stuff to make it do anything. Like, don't you need like you have to have a cart, for example, right? So, like, how do you get /cart in WordPress? You have to like publish a page that has a specific page template. Right? Like, so when you install a plugin like that, does it have to run some scripts that like make, you know, have these special, you know, special pages and that publishes content on your behalf automatically and stuff, and or not? Or am I misunderstanding how that could work?
So there's two approaches. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of approaches, but there's two basic approaches. One is to kind of create like a page that has what's in essence like a short code that gets parsed. Excuse me. And the second approach is to kind of use WordPress's rewrite API to to kind of, you know, finagle things a little bit. So when you go to shop.com/cart, it outputs the cart. The former approach is what we did from like 2006 to like now-ish, using short codes, and it kind of sucks, and there's a lot of problems. We get like support people saying, hey, like my shopping cart disappeared and I'm not making any money anymore. That sucks. What happened? And then we go in and we find out like they deleted that page like through, you know, phpMyAdmin, and like an error didn't get thrown or whatever. So that's problematic. So we actually like the rewrite approach better. And that rewrite parses templates that you can include in your theme. And it's just a better way to go. So that's how most things will do it now, is that you know, you have your product page and your like my account page where you have your orders and your cart and whatever, and all of those can kind of just be templates inside your theme folder.
I would think so. And then because it's e-commerce, it really makes sense that it would make some kind of custom post type called product or something, right? That so that you're not using posts or pages, you're literally creating actual products. That's how it works, right?
Yep, that's how all the major plugins will do it. Yep.
And then it seems like, okay, a nice onboarding experience for a plugin like this would be to also create something called like /store or something, and maybe you could use the same kind of rewriting for that. And then maybe you go look at that store, and it would be nice if there wasn't nothing in there. You know, like there was some kind of fake product or something that you could at least look at. Or it seems like that would be like a reasonable onboarding experience, but then you're in the same kind of territory, right? You don't want to auto-publish a product for something. That seems dangerous. Do you just let there be empty states all over the site and like try to guide them through creating a product as quickly as you can so that there's content for the site to work with?
Right. So that's, I mean, the question really is kind of about onboarding in general. And I think that's probably one of the weakest areas for, certainly for all our plugin for WP eCommerce, but I think also even like EDD and WooCommerce, I think that's an area that we can all grow in. There's one plugin that's fairly new that I think does a really decent job with e-commerce onboarding, and it's called iThemes Exchange. So iThemes, for people that are in the WordPress community, most people will know them as one of the bigger theme companies. And so they came out with an e-commerce plugin called Exchange, I think, last year. And that's one area that their plugin really shines, is that onboarding process. You don't have like tabs and tabs of settings and things like that. You have like a really easy onboarding process. So yeah, that's a problem that I would like to continue to solve better in our plugin. And I think, I think most complicated plugins like this, like even those polls plugins that you talked about, Chris, that's an area that as developers, I don't think that we think enough about.
Yeah. I mean, I think of every time I think of stuff, I relate it to my own products too. And like, we don't even do a very good job of onboarding at CodePen, you know, like it's a little abstract, you know, we don't, a first time non-pro user of something like CodePen, they're totally confused and it's just a bummer and I wish we could do a better job, but yeah, everybody's got to think about onboarding. I was using I switched over to, so far anyway, to Inbox by Google, you know, that new like reimagination of email that works with Gmail. It is fantastic. It's so good. I think.
You like it?
Yeah, I love it.
I've had such a hard time getting used to it. I'm trying it out, but man, it's making me like, where is
it's
everything?
A little too weird for you? Yeah, I can see that. What I couldn't get into Mailbox, the other one. That one was too weird for me because what I don't do the snoozing. I don't care about that. Right. The auto grouping is a little weird. So like I'm trying to try to get into it, but I think in the end, I think I'm probably going to just kill the bundling. I don't think it's particularly useful for me. But I like the reminders because I'm constantly emailing myself reminders, and this just has reminders built in. They just it's a type of content that just is on the side. And when you make a new email, it kind of like suggests the most recent person that you've kind of emailed, and you can just click on them and they're pre-filled and stuff. I think it's just a nice, clean looking UI. I've been loving it, and it has really good onboarding experience. Actually, kind of the way that it teaches you how to do everything is really strong.
I've been using it on my
new surfboard iPhone 6 too, and 6 Plus, pretty fancy.
Oh, you have the Plus?
I do. It's awesome. I'm gonna go sledding later.
Can you hold it in one hand?
No, absolutely not. No, I mean you can.
I love it.
I do.
Do
you have it too?
No, I want it so bad. I think about it at night and I want to own that like monster phone. It's just, it's just a mutant. It's the Toxic Avengers of phones. I just want it. Oh, I want to cuddle it. It's Sloth from Goonies. You'll be okay, buddy.
Fun fact, Goonies was filmed here in Oregon. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, it sure was. Up in that top left city.
Yes, in Astoria.
Astoria, yeah. Cool. I've been to that beach before.
It's pretty fancy.
I'm sure it's cold and nasty today. It's cold and nasty in Milwaukee today.
It's Oregon, man. It's cold and nasty on the beach like every day.
Yeah. Let's try to do one more quick, and then we'll follow. What the heck was that one?
Ghost Whisper.
AIFF.
All right, Chris. What are we doing? Yeah. One more question? You got time for one more question? Here we go. Let's keep the theme up. Here we go. Ready? Yep. Nick Gallup writes in, I have questions relating to WordPress theme plugin functionality in response to this article. And he cites a Press Up Inc. article.
I'll drop it in.
What belongs in your WordPress? While I sort of agree with the thesis of this argument, I have a hard time wanting to use any of the plugins that create taxonomies or CPTs, custom post types. What are your thoughts on this? Whether to use a plugin content type creation tool like GD Custom Post Types or a bespoke plugin for your theme you're developing, and why? Is there any difference in server resources occupied by using a plugin to add functionality versus integrating the functions with the theme functions.php?
I think if we could pare this down a little bit.
Okay.
Paring this down a little bit, I think it's a little bit about a functions.php belongs in a theme. So as soon as you change themes, a different functions.php file is then being called. So if you put a lot of like, you know, stuff like registering a taxonomy in a functions.php file, you're going to lose that the second you switch away from it, and that's dangerous. So it kind of belongs in a plugin instead. Isn't that what he's kind of talking about?
That's what it sounded like to me. It was like, should you depend on a plugin or hard code it into your functions? What do you do, Justin?
I mean, honestly, that's been kind of a discussion that the WordPress community has had over the past couple of years. And the consensus is that anything that affects the functionality of your site that might exist after you switch themes, because you or your users or your customers or whatever will eventually switch themes, it shouldn't break stuff. And that even includes things like shortcodes, right? So there's a lot of themes that depend really heavily on shortcodes for layouts and whatever. And clients don't know that. They just see like pretty buttons and it makes like two columns on the page and it's great. And then they switch themes and all they see is a bunch of shortcodes. And it's a bummer. It's a bad time. So in as much as it affects the functionality of the site, totally agree. Themes shouldn't be doing that. And that's our recommendation to people that we work with, is to have like a custom functionality plugin that's going to do things like your custom post types. And even like a lot of these things that people are wanting to do is like, oh, I need a custom post type for a portfolio, or I need a custom post type for a slider, and they want to put that in their theme. And it's like, first off, no, don't. And second, you know, but second, don't even put that like in a functionality plugin. There's actually plugins that exist in the WordPress repo that are built by really smart people that take care of these super common needs. And so, I mean, that's usually my recommendation, is find out what like the canonical like portfolio custom post type plugin is, because there is one, and find out if you're solving an issue that's already been solved. And if you need it like a custom functionality plugin, make one, but don't make yourself have a bad time in the future when you or your client has to switch themes.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. But let's say you really do have like a really bespoke site or whatever, just custom site that has like, you've invented your own very specific custom post types to accommodate the needs of this particular client. That's reasonable. That probably happens all the time. Probably there's a plugin, a generic kind of plugin for creating custom post types to help you do that. And then you're not... Right, it's like a plugin that's helping you do that. That's just going to live no matter what if you change your themes. And that the difference there is, it's not custom code that you're writing in a custom functionality plugin. It's just it's a real plugin that's presumably going to be updated and live along with you. I guess I'm not really saying anything new there, but what is a custom functionality plugin? That I think that this is like particularly important. I need to do a better job with this. It's a little different on something like CSS Tricks, because when I make the new version of CSS Tricks, I'm just going to duplicate the theme folder and call it something else and then modify things, because it's just been around forever, you know? So that's like a little bit of a different situation. So if there's things in the functions.php, I'm like, it's like not a disaster, but there's probably things in there right now that should be moved that are just so specific. Like even some of the stuff we're doing with Markdown is like in there, and it probably should be moved out to a functionality plugin, which would take like 10 seconds, right? Because you just make a new plugin, you drop in the plugins folder, you put that little block of comments at the top that like define what that it's a comment, right? I think they have to be in a kind of a specific format for the plugin to work. And then anything you put in there just runs if that plugin is active, right? So it's not even like a different format you have to learn or something. It's just like...
Yeah, and that's usually what it comes down to. And I think, you know, there's a lot of really great things that make a ton of sense for your functions.php file. Like if you're using like the WordPress customizer to customize certain areas of the theme or things like that, there is a load of stuff that makes sense in there. But yeah, I think anything that might exist after you switch themes, or that just is cluttering up your functions.php file, right? We worked with a client recently who had a theme who I won't mention because it's a really popular one. But the functions.php file was like almost 5,000 lines of code. Honestly, I just wanted to like stab myself in the face a lot, because it was just so bad, you know, and so much of it.
At least when it's that many, Cohen, can't you at least, even if it has to be that long, kind of break it out into chunks that are specific?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, even that theme company could easily have like a canonical, a custom plugin that would do a lot of what they did, that would exist throughout all of their themes and things like that. So yeah, it's one of those areas that I think there's a pretty solid consensus on that if you're adding functionality that could conceivably exist beyond your current theme that isn't presentational, yeah, just put that in a plugin.
I don't know. I'm like, if you can't do it in one big file, is it worth, you know, did you do it at all? You know, I like 5,000. No, I don't.
Well, we did a good job. We kind of cleaned house on WordPress, answered a bunch of questions. We didn't talk about how to keep a local and remote database in sync, though. That's pretty rare that we talk about WordPress without mentioning that.
Justin, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. If people aren't following you or giving you money, how can they give you money on the internet?
Wow, that's scary. Oh yeah, so you can give me money. I take cash. I take Bitcoin. You can send Bitcoin to my house. That's great. No, but our agency website is zao.is. People can get in contact with us there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's js_zao. And yeah, I love chatting with people about their projects and helping however we can.
Great. Thank you very much. And thank you everyone for coming out on this spooky Halloween HTMLoween episode of the Shop Talk Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and other things. That's all I got. Chris,
oh,
you got
no,
anything?
That sounds like a nice way to wrap things up. I'm going to go with shoptalkshow.com. Oh, I'm the worst.
This is an outro.
This is ridiculous. Where did you find this?
It was 99 cents from the App Store.